You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning. Welcome to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackowitz, pastor of St. Mary Parish in Evanston. The time is exactly 9 o'clock on Relevant Radio 950. And co-hosting Graziano Marcheschi, the Director of Ministerial Resources for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Graz, thank you for helping me with your title. How are you, Graz?
I'm very well.
How was your weekend?
Oh, wow. Besides the amazing amount of news that's been happening, I had one of the peak experiences of my life this weekend, I have to tell you.
What was that?
Went down to Indiana, Indiana University. My son was in a concert. It blew me away. I've never been so proud, I tell you.
What instrument does he play?
His voice.
Oh, singing.
Yes. Straight Note Chaser, a cappella group. There's a college group and there's a professional group. Both groups came together for their 15th anniversary because the group was founded at Indiana U. So the original guys have gone pro. They've done five or six albums. And these are their little brothers, their legacy group that continues at Indiana University.
And your son is part of that group.
He's part of that group.
What year is he in college?
He's a sophomore. And the professional
tenor?
Guys, I got to tell you this, the professional guys were eyeing him. They loved his voice.
Tenor?
No, he's a bass. He's actually a baritone, but he's got pretty wide range, and he sings bass. And bass, they tell me, I never knew. I always thought my son was like the, in the background, but they say that the bass is the foundation of an a cappella group.
So you and Nancy are very proud parents.
Oh, my God.
Congratulations.
Oh, we were.
On a cloud.
On a cloud.
Well, that's outstanding to have a
But stomach. What an amazing weekend this was, huh?
Well, the
royal wedding, the beatification, the demise of Osama bin Laden.
White Sox lost more games. So, speaking of beatification, our entire program will be devoted to the beatification of the late Pope John Paul II. And in-studio guest with us for this morning, Father Bill Westman, promoter of justice in the Tribunal for the Archdiocese of Chicago, and Jan Lorys, the director of the Polish Museum of America. And welcome to Jan and Father Bill. Welcome to Catholic Community of Faith.
Dzień dobry.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Dziękuję. And we are taking phone calls at 312-255-8408 as we try to remember the late Pope John Paul II, of course, his historic visit here into Chicago in 1979. In fact, Graz, I was ordained a priest on May 9th, 1979, with the Pope visiting Chicago in October of 79.
Yeah.
I was privileged to distribute Holy Communion at the Mass at Five Holy Martyrs.
Really?
That first week in October of 79, I was a priest no more than, what, 4 or 5 months, but it's etched in my mind forever.
I don't think I knew you then, but I was there. I was in that.
We met back in the 80s. And
yeah.
I didn't know you back then. But Father Bill, many people just take for granted the whole thing of the steps to sainthood, and yet there's a real rigorous process. And in a summary form, what is the process to becoming a saint?
First of all, it begins with the people. If there's anything that's democratic in the church, it's the process of canonization and beatification. The people develop a devotion to a man or woman whom they consider to be very holy. That's the beginning of the process. And without that, there is no process. Someone says, well, why doesn't the Pope do this, or why doesn't the bishop do this? And the answer is, well, it's got to start with the people.
So that once it starts with the people, what is the first formal step after that?
Then they request the bishop of the diocese where the person died to begin a process. Excuse me.
Now, don't die on us here, Father Bill.
Dry throat.
So it begins.
So people begin to pray to the individual, seeking God's intercession through that person. And then they show that there is a devotion to the person. When there's a movement like that, praying to a certain individual, let's take the example of John Paul II. This is very evident. From the time of his death, we all heard people on television, radio, people shouting, Santo Subito, Saint immediately. So there was this devotion to him because he impressed so many people by the holiness of his life. Then, if there's evidence of that, the bishop will appoint a diocesan postulator. A postulator means to petition. And he petitions in the name of a group of people. It can be the diocese or a group of the faithful. And they gather the information about this individual. This is a very rigorous process because what the church is seeking, truth. Truth, that's it. Was this person a holy individual? And how do you prove that? There are two ways of proving it. In a case of a person who died recently, it's by eyewitnesses, persons who knew the individual. And when the bishop starts the process, a number of people who knew the individual will be called to give testimony, to explain why this person was a holy person, the virtues this person practiced. There is also a rigorous examination of all the writings of the individual. There's a historical commission that is assigned the task of collecting all the published and unpublished writings of the individual, which are examined. And they are to write a report for the bishop concerning this individual, giving a spiritual profile of the person, and pointing out any difficulties in that person's life that indicate the individual is not a saint. Then you have theological commission. They examine what the others have said and give this proposal that the person was truly saint.
You know, what you said earlier, Father, about starting with the people. Currently, we've been talking a lot about the diocesan effort to look at the life of Father Augustus Tolton. And because I had worked closely with a formation and scholarship program that's named for him, I had observed that whenever the members of the group came together, there was this attitude towards Father Tolton, that he wasn't just the eponymous, the person that their program was named after, but there was a real sense of devotion to him. And when Cardinal George announced that the diocese was beginning this process, I thought, well, that's just a reflection of what's already begun among the people, that even though there hadn't been anything official at the grassroots level, there was this sense of devotion to him. Now, Jan Loris, you're the director of the Polish
Museum
here in Chicago. Pope John Paul II, of course, had a universal appeal, and he was the pope of the entire world. Mm-hmm. But the Polish people have a very, very special connection to him. Tell us a little bit about the reaction within your community to the beatification.
Well, actually, just to point out something, the papal visit was not the first visit of John Paul II to Chicago. He had come twice, back in 1969 and in 1976, as Cardinal Karol Wojtyła of Kraków to visit Chicago, specifically Five Holy Martyrs Parish. He had a one-day almost blitz of the city.
Wasn't he good friends with Bishop Abramowicz?
He was very good friends with Bishop Abramowicz. In fact, the first visit, he stayed down at Five Holy Martyrs, where one of the papal masses was held. He came in. He visited the south side. He wanted also to see the west side of Chicago on his way from going from Resurrection Cemetery on the south side to the north side. He stopped off and wanted to see what some of the poorer neighborhoods in Chicago looked like. He also visited our museum. So We have some photographs. In fact, we have a small
exhibit. So he was at the Polish Museum of America? America,
yes.
In what year?
This would be 1969, and he also came in 76.
And on one of those two visits, he also visited Gordon Tech High School.
Yes.
Which is the reason that the band from Gordon Tech was invited to the Mass at Five Holy Martyrs after he had become Pope.
And I know as Pope in 79, when he visited, he went to St. Mary of Nazareth Hospital. Mm-hmm. He was met by the front door, Dr. Bruce Zumo, who was chief of staff at the time. We're going to go to a break here on Catholic Community Faith and Relevant Radio 950. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Gratzina Markeski and our guest, Father Bill Westman, Jan Loris. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. We'll be back right after a break.
Okay, I was wondering if you were...
The Bank of America Chicago Marathon, taking place on Sunday, October 9th, is sold out, but Team Catholic Charities has post-close entries. By joining Team Catholic Charities, you'll be running to help our neighbors in need of food, clothing, and shelter, necessities for everyday survival. To join or sponsor the Catholic Charities Marathon team or committee, call 312-655-7912. That's 312-655-7912. Visit us at catholiccharities.net/Chicago Marathon. We'll see you at the finish line.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection." There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298 or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, AM 950. It's almost 9:13 in the morning on this Monday. Hope you're having a great start to your week. Thank you for spending this time of your day with us. Yesterday, the Universal Church beatified Pope John Paul II, who was truly a universal pope. He was seen by more people than any other human being in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's a remarkable thing. And
most traveled.
Yeah, not only that, but he was the most beloved. The reason that he kept going round and round is people wanted to see the Holy Father. So we're talking about his beatification. Jan, you were talking to us about his connection to the Polish community and how he had come to Chicago even as a much younger man, as a cardinal. How did he maintain his connection to Chicago? I think he always had a great affection for this city, didn't he?
I'm sure that he did, because when people did go to Rome and were in the crowd, everybody made sure they had some type of placard that identified them from being from Chicago. And when I was much younger, I used to be in the Polish Scouts, and I remember we were in Italy. We had a jamboree at Monte Cassino when we got to see Pope Paul VI. And the order came out that we were all supposed to put on long pants, not wear our shorts, wear long pants when we had the audience with the Pope. A few years later, after a group of scouts went to see Pope John Paul II, and he sat down with them at a campfire, sang the songs, and of course was not offended by the guys wearing the short pants. So it's just two different examples, I think, of what we talked about, of the popularity of the Pope, and also the fact that he reached out to people. I think that's very important. And what Father said about the grassroots movement, I think that could have, if it would have been just a straight vote, I think beatification and sainthood would have happened much earlier. But of course, it's a good thing that we do have those controls and that searching and reviewing process.
In fact, speaking of those controls and searching, Father Bill, continue the process of beatification. We're going to kind of go back and forth between the process and the impact on the Polish community. So, Father Bill, you have the floor.
Yes. Okay. Once the historical process is done, and then you have the report from them and the theologians, witnesses are heard. In the case of a person of recent death, you have eyewitnesses, people who actually knew the person. In the case of a person who had died long before, you have what is called a historical process, and there you don't have eyewitnesses because they're all dead. But you do have people who witness concerning the reputation of holiness. Now, this will be the cause of Father Tolton, because no one is still living that knew him. But as our narrator here, a moderator, said, there's this devotion of people. Bishop Perry was telling me, and on the East Coast, where he was well known, especially Philadelphia, because of his relationship with St. Mother Catherine Drexel. He was well known there, and there's a real devotion among the people in Philadelphia. That's what we call the fama sanctitatis, the reputation of holiness. So you prove that so that the cause can go on. Once you proved that the person was holy, then the case can be considered by the Holy See. All that documentation is sent to Rome, where it is judged. It is examined by experts to see that the process was conducted properly according to the norms of law, and that there is true evidence that it was he or she was a very holy individual.
Now, we know in the case of Pope John Paul II, he was put on the fast track. So normally the process is not this quick. Am I right, Father Bill?
Normally the person must be dead 5 years. And the reason for that is you can easily have the enthusiasm of the moment, that people get all excited and they want to do something too quickly. The two exceptions have been made to that five-year rule. The one was for Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta and John Paul II.
Because he died on April 2nd, 2005, and here it is on May 1st, 2011, so 6 years and 1 month, he's already reached the stage of beatification.
That's right.
Father Westman, why was the role of the devil's advocate removed from the beatification canonization process?
That's a popular term. It never existed in church law. It is basically a person who points out the difficulties. On the local level, for a cause, you have the promoter of justice to make sure that all the norms are followed. On the Roman level, you have the promoter of faith, and he does the same thing. But he has the added responsibility to point out the difficulties, why this person may not have been a saint.
We're going to go to break here on Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Grazia Marcheschi, and our guest, Father Bill Westman, promoter of justice in the Tribunal for the Archdiocese, and Jan Lorys, the director of the Polish Museum of America. Our phone number, 312-255-8408, a question or comment you may have. Stay with us. We'll be back after a break, and do not touch that dial.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
During the next half hour, we'll talk with Cardinal Francis George about the beatification of Pope John Paul II. We'll take you on a pilgrimage to Quincy, Illinois, a river town that played a major role in the life of Father Augustus Tolton. and we'll give you a snapshot of the strategic pastoral plan for the Archdiocese of Chicago.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You, compelling television about your Archdiocese.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at catholicnewworld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith. Graziano Marcheschi, co-hosting with Father Greg Sackowitz. Very pleased and proud to be with you this morning. Thank you for spending this time with us. We're talking about the beatification of Pope John Paul II. A moment of importance for the entire church. We have a Polish museum here in Chicago. The Pope obviously was of Polish descent. Jan, tell us, do you have any mementos, souvenirs, memorabilia of the Holy Father in your collection?
Yes, we do. We do have an exhibit of the Pope that was put up much, much earlier. In fact, we have two big statues of the Pope. One is a bust, and there's also we have the model for the statue of Pope John Paul II that is at St. Helen's Church. So we have those two. But for about 2 months, we will be having a photo exhibit of the Pope in Chicago as both his papal visit and his two visits at in 69 and 76.
Jan, give us the address and location of the Polish Museum of America.
The Polish Museum of America is located at the intersection of Augusta and Milwaukee, 984 North Milwaukee Avenue. So if you're ecologically minded and use public transportation, we're at the Augusta stop of the 56 Milwaukee bus. We're also halfway between the Chicago station and the Division station on the Blue Line. And if you're still driving around, we have a parking lot to the west of the building.
And give us a phone number.
773-384-3352.
Then number once again.
773-384-3352.
And what about a web?
PMA at Polish Museum of America, all one word, .org.
And Graz, would you believe I was born 1124 North Milwaukee, 1.5 blocks away from the Polish Museum of America, right? I was born in Milwaukee Division.
Yeah, well, one day there's going to be the Father Greg Sackowitz exhibit at the museum. There's no doubt. With a microphone in front of your face.
I don't think so. And I was baptized at Holy Trinity. So, Father Bill, you know, we're talking briefly between breaks that the present or the late Pope John Paul II named about 1,600 saints. More than any other pope in the history of the church. Why was that?
First of all, many of these processes were already begun long before he became pope, and they came to their fruition. And also, you had many of the people were baptized in large groups. For example, are canonized in large groups, Korean martyrs, the martyrs in England under Elizabeth II. You know, have a 100 people there. So that boosts the number immediately when you have these large groups of people. We must also consider the size of the world population and the Catholic population. 200 years ago, how many people were there in the world? You know, several hundred million at the most, if that many. And today we have way over 1 billion people. So hopefully we have many more holy people today than we did formerly.
And from a greater range, not just on the European front, but the absolute worldwide.
Yeah. See, in the United States, there was little interest in having saints. We were too busy just trying to live as Catholics. And now interest has begun and causes have begun. Our first saint in America was Mother Cabrini, who didn't live that long ago, but that's the first American saint. Now our Catholic people are interested in this, and they want something done.
Yeah. I remember as a young man, actually throughout my life, often noting how many saints were of Italian ancestry. And, of course, I took great pride in that, but I often wondered, why don't we have saints from other cultures? And that, I think, you know, was clearly one of John Paul II's agendas, is to show that holy people exist in every culture. And the Church is universal, and so her community of saints needs to be universal as well.
I think all of us need to have saints that walk the same streets we walk, breathe the same air we breathe. We need our own saints, and that's true of all people.
And that's an important point to make, is that not just saints of the past, which are very important, but as Gratz mentioned, the number of saintly people walking the world today. Mm-hmm. So, and there are many of them that we may even know saintly people.
Yeah, that's why I feel so privileged, I think all of us do, is that this Pope lived within our own lifetime. You know, as a little kid, I always thought, well, saints were people who lived a long time ago.
Exactly.
You know, and
people,
I always wondered, why isn't anybody today being canonized? Well, then John Paul II came along and proved me wrong and said, no, of course there's holy people around today. And, you know, millions of people in the world got to meet him, and they can all say that they've met a saint.
Jan, did you actually meet Pope John Paul II?
Actually, I did. There was a group organized, and unfortunately it was towards the end, about 2 years before he died, and you can see the physical problems that he had, but mentally he was there. We went to a mass given by the Pope, and I presented him with a few things from the Polish Museum, and he remembered, and he said that he had visited the Polish Museum. So, as a guy said, mentally top-notch, unfortunately, the physical deterioration.
You know, the closest I got to the Pope John Paul II was when he made the visit to Holy Name Cathedral, again, mm-hmm. in October of 79, for all the priests of the Archdiocese mm-hmm. of Chicago. I was in the front half of the church, about the second or third person off the main aisle. So as he came down the main aisle of Holy Name Cathedral, I would have gotten within about 6 or 8 feet, is the closest I ever got to him. And the thing that struck me was he was a big man. I mean, he was built like a linebacker.
He was.
And, of course, he was a great skier, great athlete. But that was the thing that really struck me, was a man of great physical stature and a tremendous presence about him.
I had the opportunity to stand right in front of him, put my hand on his shoulder, and I realized this is a solid, sturdy man who came from the mountains.
We are going to have to bring this segment to a close. I want to thank in a very special way our guest, Father Bill Westman, promoter of justice in the Tribunal for the Archdiocese of Chicago, and Jan Loris, the director of the Polish Museum of America. Jan, Father Bill, thank you for joining us on Catholic Community Faith here on Relevant Radio 950. I'm Father Greg Sakowicz, along with Graziano Marcheschi. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. We're going to keep on the conversation of the beatification of Pope John Paul II after a station break.
Tour rooms of antique mechanical curiosities from Victrolas to steam engines at the magical San Filippo Estate Saturday, May 21st at Catholic Charities Hearts for Homeless Families fundraiser. The dazzling event benefits programs that help the homeless in Northwest Cook County. The ticket price of $175 per person includes an extensive tour, elegant dinner, and lively auction emceed by radio personality Gary Meyer. For more information, visit catholiccharities.net/hearts or call 847-376-2118.
Catholic teens and young adults are preparing for World Youth Day 2011 in Madrid, Spain. The Archdiocese is sponsoring an exciting and inspirational 9-day trip for this coming August.
World Youth Day is a week-long spiritual journey during which teens and young adults from around the world unite to share their faith.
The Archdiocese organized trip to Madrid will include daily mass, catechesis, festivals, walking tours, and all the events scheduled with the Holy Father Pope Benedict the 16th.
That includes a welcoming ceremony, an evening candlelight vigil, and the closing mass. And for young people not going to Madrid, there's a wonderful World Youth Day celebration planned at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine in Des Plaines.
The regional event will bring together young Catholics from Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. There will even be a giant TV hookup so you can pray along with the Pope during the closing mass in Madrid.
Go to the Archdiocese website, www.archchicago.org, and click on World Youth Day. You'll find information regarding travel to Madrid, our local festivities, and a link to the official World Youth Day website.
Plan now. Be part of this inspirational and memorable celebration of our faith.
World Youth Day 2011.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz along with Grazia Marcheschi. Our phone number 312-255-8408. We've been spending the last half hour in the beatification of Pope John Paul II, but Graz, this music means only
one thing.
Joyce DeRiga, editor of the Catholic New World, the Archdiocese of Chicago. Joyce, welcome to Catholic Community of Faith.
Hi, good morning.
I tell you, we're going to have you on three or four times a show.
See,
because of the music.
The music.
So what is happening in the latest issue of the Catholic New World, the paper of the Archdiocese of Chicago?
Well, right now we're working on our next issue, and both issues that we've covered, the one that just came out about a week and a half ago, and then the one coming up, we've done a lot of coverage for the beatification of John Paul II. You know, you're talking about it today, but he visited Chicago, so there's a lot of connections here where places he's been, people have, there's a street named for him, and there was one that was named for him yesterday.
Oh, and really? Where's that?
The one that's up now is over by Five Holy Martyrs. There's on Richmond in Pope John Paul II by Kedzie, 43rd and Kedzie.
Oh, great.
And, you know, there's lots of connections to Chicago, so we were exploring a bit of that. And then, you know, Catholic New World had sponsored a pilgrimage over there, so there's a bunch of people over there now, and we'll get some of their reaction, plus the national, international stories with some coverage from there. And then the Cardinal wrote about Easter, and his Easter homily is going to be in, he's over there now, as you know, will be in the paper. In this last issue, we also covered a pilgrimage to Quincy, where the bishops, Cardinal George and Bishop Kane and Bishop Perry and some of the Illinois bishops made a pilgrimage to the early sites in the life of Augustus Tolton.
Very well done piece, by the way.
And even Michael May made that trip with you,
Joyce. He did, yeah.
To the site down in the southern
part of Illinois.
That's why
the piece is so good.
Exactly. And now, interesting question for you, Joyce, and that is, in all the work you did on this latest issue of the Catholic New World, what did you learn about Pope John Paul II in all the writings that are in the issue that you did not know about before?
You know, I'm a big fan of John Paul II. He was instrumental in my reversion to the faith, so there's a lot that I've already studied and things like that, but mostly the Chicago connection. You know, I'm not from Chicago, and I've been here 3 years, and just all the places he came here and when he was here and all the lives he touched, you know, and the things that the people in Chicago have done to memorialize him and stay in touch with him since then has been pretty phenomenal. He's got a lot of fans here in Chicago.
He certainly does.
And all over the world.
Amen.
It just warms the heart. Every time I think about him, I just feel better.
It was interesting when his visit to Chicago in 79, I remembered like it happened 2 or 3 years ago. It's going to be 32 years ago this October. So Joyce DeRiga, the editor of the Catholic New World for the Archdiocese of Chicago. If someone wants to get a copy of the newspaper, give us a phone and a web.
312-534-7577. That's my phone number. And then they can check online at catholicnewworld.com.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Joyce. Keep up the great work. It was an excellent issue. I read it when you were talking about it, and the one you'll be working on will come out soon.
And those of you who are subscribers, tell your friends about it. Everybody should be subscribing to the Catholic New World.
Keep up the great work, Joyce, and thank you for joining us here on Catholic Community Faith and Relevant Radio 950. Time is coming up on 9:36 on this Monday morning, the first Monday in May. The sun is out, Gratz, and we had more clouds in the month of April. We set a record for least amount of sunlight, but put this in perspective. We're talking about clouds and rain in April, but the horrific situation in the southern states with the tornadoes, some F5 tornadoes, and of course, the tremendous disaster in Japan going back to March. So you put in, say it's cloudy and rainy, it's okay.
Yeah, cloudy and rainy is fine.
It is absolutely fine.
And we should expect gazillions of flowers in May since we had so much rain.
So much rain, exactly. So part two of our program, I want to welcome in studio Sister Joan McGuire, the Director of Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Good morning, Sister Joan.
Good morning.
And welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith. And we also have with us by phone Rabbi Herman Shulman, Rabbi Emeritus of Emmanuel Congregation in Chicago, past President of the Central Conference of the American Rabbis and of the Council of Religious Leaders of Metropolitan Chicago. Gratz, that's the longest title I've ever heard.
Yes, many more.
Rabbi Herman, welcome to Catholic Community Faith.
Good morning.
And glad to have both of you with us. Sister Joan, just from an ecumenical perspective, what are some of the most significant comments you'd want to make with the relationship of people of other churches and of other religions for the late Pope John Paul II?
Well, I think overall, I would say this Pope was so interested in this new millennium that it would really be a new world. And so I see through all of his works the idea of forgiveness, love, and peace. And so those are trends that run through all of his talk. I think probably I would have to say perhaps the most significant is the relationship with the Jewish community. So I'm very happy, Rabbi Shulman, that you're here. I'd like to tell the world that you celebrated your 95th birthday about 3 or 4 days ago, had a wonderful celebration.
Wait, time out. Rabbi Shulman, you turned 95 3 or 4 days ago?
Yes, last Thursday I turned 95.
But I heard that you have a racquetball game at 10 o'clock this morning when we get off the air. Well, 95 years old, and you are still active in the community.
Leader and pioneer.
May I say mazel tov.
God bless you.
Well, thank you. That's a nice wish.
God bless you, and belated happy birthday on your 95th. Maybe Sister Joan was talking, Rabbi Shulman, the relationship between Pope John Paul II and the Jewish community.
And yeah. Rabbi, maybe you'd like to speak to that.
I'd like to, if you give me a moment. First of all, it was during his papacy that the Vatican and the State of Israel came to terms diplomatically, which was the first time because the State of Israel, of course, was founded in 1948, and it was not until the middle 90s that this concordat was concluded, and that meant that from that time onward, the State of Israel and the Vatican were on full mutual diplomatic status and recognition of each other. I know that that meant a great deal also to the late Cardinal Bernardin, who made a pilgrimage to the land of Israel right after the relationships between the Vatican and the State of Israel had been normalized. So I also have a vivid memory of the Holy Father standing at the Western Wall and inserting a petitional slip of paper into the cracks of that wall as pious Jews had done for centuries. So these are all very, very momentous memories in my life of the occupant of the seat of St. Peter, of the throne of St. Peter, and his reach into the hearts of the Jewish community.
That really was an iconic moment when he stood at the Western Wall.
Yes, there's no question that any of us that have any kind of capacity to remember important and significant moments in history, this ranks, as far as I'm concerned, as high as any that I can think of in connection with the wall. Yeah,
that's wonderful.
I've often thought as to what might have motivated this Pope of the Church to be so interested in Jews. And of course I know that he grew up as a young boy and man in Poland and had Jewish companions and friends whose lives he knew and with whom he shared a lot of common thoughts and activities. And I know he was also a witness to the Nazi cleansing of the Krakow ghetto, which was one of the most merciless and cruel actions of that horrendous period of time. And I know that, among others, he rescued what was believed to have been a dead young woman that was left on the side of the road in dead winter when the march from Auschwitz concentration camp, death camp, was ordered. He took her upon his shoulders, I am told, and carried her to Krakow, and she not only survived, she became a factor then in the reconstitution of...
And Rabbi Shalman, that is very personal to you because you lived in Germany and left there in the 30s. So.
See, I never heard that story about Pope John Paul II finding a woman left for dead from the concentration camp of Auschwitz.
She was left, you know, there was a death march.
Now, I knew about the death march.
And so she was left in a ditch on the side of the road because she couldn't walk anymore. She was half a skeleton, and she was believed to be dead, so nobody bothered about her. But somehow or other, the young man who later became a priest, or who was already studying for the priesthood, I'm not sure about that detail, found her, took her upon his own back and carried her into safety and to life. And so he had all kinds of understandings of the fate of Jews during those horrendous years of the Shoah and of the Second World War. And I have a notion that his first-hand knowledge of all of this and the deep impact it made on his great soul moved him, and then later when he became the head of the Church, to reach out in all kinds of ways. I know there is, for instance, a book that he has written that was written by the man who himself then had this relationship, and that was the Pope's music director, a composer and conductor of the Krakow Symphony, whom the Pope got to know and for whom, with whom he then arranged all kinds of major musical events commemorating the Shoah, for instance, and other such things under the auspices of the papacy in the Vatican. An unprecedented move in the Church's history.
I'm sorry, go ahead, finish.
Yeah, so all of these are bits and pieces that for me create a mosaic of one of the outstanding religious figures that the world had ever produced.
Well, Rabbi, let me say that it's very, very moving to me to hear a great elder of the Jewish faith, a faith for which I have the deepest respect, to have an elder of that faith speak so positively and with such affection about a pope who has touched the lives of all of us and someone for whom we all have great, great affection. So thank you so much for those kind words. We need to move to a break right now. Please stay with us. We'll return after these brief announcements. Please don't go away.
Well, he's a boy.
Each night, thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. So I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities, and it just happened when I got through. Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, "You know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in?" And she gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, "Is this something you can do?" And I looked at her and says, "You're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now. And I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head."
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
If you haven't read the Catholic New World lately, you're in for quite a surprise. It's bigger, bolder, and better than ever before.
The Catholic New World is a rich and diverse resource for Catholics throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. It carries stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Our most read column is written by our publisher, Cardinal Francis George, our shepherd, teacher, and leader.
Our columnists provide support in spirituality and evangelization, and you'll want to browse the Around the Archdiocese page, your gateway to Catholic activities throughout Cook and Lake Counties.
Are you constantly on the go? Then stay connected to your church by visiting CatholicNewWorld.com and sign up to follow us on Twitter.
That's CatholicNewWorld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and if you haven't already, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777.
Your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Welcome back to Catholic Community Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz along with Grazia Marcheschi. The time is coming up on 948 on this beautiful sunny Monday morning in Chicago. We've been speaking about the beatification of Pope John Paul II, and our guest this half hour, Sister Joan McGuire, the Director of Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs for the Archdiocese, and by phone, Rabbi Herman Shulman, Rabbi Emeritus of Emmanuel Congregation in Chicago. Sister Joan, Pope John Paul II's engagement with the youth throughout the world is, you know, very well known. Give us a comment or two on his address to the young Muslims during his apostolic journey to North Africa some years ago.
Yes, I think this is very significant. In the early 80s, the Pope very early started working with the youth groups, but I was amazed to find that this address that he gave to the young Muslims in Morocco. As we know, the Pope, wherever he would land, he would always, in every country, he would see the religious leaders or make some point to see the religious leaders, the Christian leaders and of other churches. But in as early as 1985, which is about the time the first Youth World Day happened, he spoke to the Muslims of Morocco. And I would say that last Sunday in the homily I heard in church, the pastor was talking of Pope John's consistent message to the young people. And it was, God loves you, I love you, the church loves you, and the church needs you. And when I read the address that the Pope gave to these Muslim youth, it was the same thing. God loves you, I love you, the Pope of the Catholic Church loves you, and your faith community loves you and needs you. So it was really something. And I just quote, from him. Dear young people, I wish that you may be able to help in building a world where God may have first place in order to aid and to save mankind. On this path, you are assured of the esteem and the collaboration of your Catholic brothers and sisters, whom I represent among you this evening. So I think that's a wonderful tribute.
That's a great summary.
Why do you think he had such affection for young people?
I don't know, and this is coming off my head right now. You know, he didn't have much family around him as he grew up. As I think people have mentioned, his mother and father died, his brother. And so, and then I think when, as I understand it, when he was the bishop or archbishop, somewhere he got very involved in the youth movement. And I think everyone has certain charisms. And his was one with youth. And I'm looking for everyone who has these charisms for ecumenical and interreligious.
And the thing is, that was a profound gift. And the young people were attracted to him because a great athlete.
Yeah.
And in some ways, he spoke their language. And he just really knew deep down that, I think he once said to the young people, I was once your age. Right. I was once your age. Yeah. I know where you're coming from.
And not only as an athlete, but as an actor.
As an actor,
you know, that would impress me much more that he was in that whole arts and wonderful. And he certainly brought that to his pontificate.
Yes, he did.
Absolutely.
All right.
Now, the Holy Father, besides the very special and profound mm-hmm. relationship he had with our Jewish brothers and sisters, he also tried to develop relationships with other faiths, including faiths of the East.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about some of that relationship.
That's right, because we've spoken, as Christians, we've spoken with the Jewish and Muslim community, sometimes called the Abrahamic, but you're really the ones, all of those great religions came out of Asia, but the ones that are farther east would be really, the Pope is just implementing what the Vatican II document on relationships with other non-Christians and with other religions, people of other religions. And so he was implementing Nostra Aetate, which is just two pages that tells everything that he's doing. But the thing I wanted to mention is he established a way we should pray. When he brought, and besides that, forgiveness and love, there's also peace in all of his themes. And so he did in Assisi, again, and this is 1980s, had the Assisi Day of Prayer, where he brought all the religious leaders from the Christian churches and from the others to Assisi to pray for peace. And he set up what we call this Assisi model, in which each religion, each Christian community can pray in their specific way in the presence of the other. And so the other sees how another worships or presents their beliefs. And so we use that Assisi model. And just 2 weeks ago, when the Asian ministry of the Archdiocese, the Japanese ministry, wanted to do something for the people in Japan, we put on the St. Teresa Catholic Chinese Mission in Chinatown did an interfaith, interreligious service, and we use this Assisi model. So,
how does that work specifically, praying in the presence of one another?
Well, it's done very often. It's going to be done again for the indigent. Every year there's a service for the those who have been buried in the Cook County, but no one has claimed mm-hmm, their bodies. Mm-hmm. And so that's an interfaith. So we'd have someone from all of the different religions or different Christian churches take turns in reading the names of these people who have suffered. Or we do that at Thanksgiving time, when we're out of every different religious tradition, people would say how they thank God or their Creator. So no one has to worship in another tradition. We don't put them all together.
You know, Sister Joel McGuire, in the last couple of minutes, what are some of your final remarks on the late Pope John Paul II? Just some of your final remarks. I want to get back to the rabbi in a moment, but just how would you summarize his life, or what impact did he have on your life from an ecumenical perspective?
Well, from an ecumenical perspective, the way he implemented this whole, this was first thing on, I mean, on his agenda any place he would go. He would never ignore that. I think he just saw this this need for peace and respecting the dignity of the dignity of the person, and where we most do not respect the dignity of the person is when they're different than we are. So I think with all our cultural differences and now our interreligious, those are the places where we really can see if we're Christians and that we love one another.
When that's a great response. And Rabbi Shulman, I mean, the very fact that you are now 95 years old, and as Graziano, the co-host, mentioned, you know, an elder, a wisdom figure in the community, with your years to this point, as you look at the life of the late Pope John Paul II, how did he impact you personally and the Jewish community from your perspective?
Well, I think he understood in a way maybe most profoundly and maybe more so than maybe any others that I can think of, that the church is one major component of the human family, but that there are others as well who in their own way strive for the same kinds of ultimate values and commitments to justice and peace and sensitivity to the needs of others. I think what impressed me most as I think of John Paul II, and I do from time to time with great affection, and this, that he understood that we need each other in order to make this world, which is so complex and has so many contrary trends in it, into something that would please God and would be most beneficial for God's creatures, the human race. So I think of him in this way. And then there is one particular moment, and that is when he had just become the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, and an audience was arranged between him and the leaders of the American Jewish Committee. And when they entered the sala in which he was presiding, he opened his arms and said, "I am your brother Joseph." And that, of course, immediately broke any kinds of resistances or walls or barriers that had existed for centuries. And then one of his greatest disciples and admirers, Joseph Cardinal Bernardin, who was here in Chicago, did the same thing for us when he became the Archbishop here. He invited some of us into the residence, and as he came to greet us, he opened his arms and said, "I am your brother Joseph," quoting the Holy Father verbatim. And I must tell you that I've never forgotten that moment, because I had the opportunity to be part of that reception at the time. And then between him and me, there developed a profound friendship.
One of the phrases that most often flowed from the lips of the Holy Father was, "Be not afraid." And I think everything you're saying reflects that. One of his goals was really to help people to not be afraid of one another, but to really embrace each other as brothers and sisters.
That is not easy to do, because we all have been raised somehow in a very constricted way, thinking only of our own selves or of our own community as somehow special or important only for ourselves. And I think that what we all need to do, and what I think the Pope represented and was an exemplar of and practiced himself, is to reach out in fullness of presence and understanding.
And on that note, Rabbi, we need to bring the program to a close. Thank you very much, Rabbi Shulman,
for
joining us, along with Sister Joan McGuire, to co-host Grazia Marcheschi. Great job with our producer, Jim Dish. Great work with our engineer, Michael May. To our listeners, God bless and have a blessed week.
And you too.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day and God bless you.